How do you tell when we start, anyway?
Because we say hi.
Oh, hi. Well, we got that out of the way. Let's go.
All right. Welcome to Tit Radio, episode 16. I'm Monster B, and at the table tonight is Azmet.
Good evening, Monster B, and the round table.
J-Man.
Hello.
Klaatu.
Hi, everyone.
And 330.
Hello.
Our Fedora ambassador. That's the rumor on the street. Is that true?
It is absolutely true.
And what is that?
Hate Fedora.
Did you used to hate Fedora?
I did. I was a big-time Fedora hater, but have since changed my ways.
What changed your ways? It seemed like, okay, we went to Ohio Linux Fest, and then just a couple hours later, you were, like, totally into Fedora. What happened?
Well, I was already pretty upset with some of the other major distros, their kind of lackadaisical view of software freedom. And I was in that talk where Tom Calloway was talking about licensing from a hacker's point of view, and he was talking about the way that Fedora tracks licenses. And you know, they have an entire mailing list devoted to, hey, does this work in Fedora? And people explaining, no, you can't incorporate that because of this, this, and this parts of these licenses.
Wow.
And I was like, you know, somebody's got a database of licenses. I mean, they're pretty serious because, you know, that's kind of a pain to build. And they were tracking 20-some variants of the BSD license itself. Or no, it's the MIT license, I'm sorry. And I didn't even know there were 20 variants of it, so I figured it was probably the place to go.
Why isn't Fedora on that list, you know, for the free GNU Linux distributions like they have on the, you know, on the GNU.org site?
I think it's because the Fedora project doesn't call itself Fedora GNU/Linux.
No, I thought it was because of their kernel. Like, don't you have to have, like, that weird sort of, like, stripped kernel in order to qualify for that, where there's no binary blobs in the kernel or microcode or something? Is that what I was hearing at one point?
It may have been true at one point. I'm not exactly sure. Because I know GNUSense, they have the Debian Linny style of, hey, if you point us to the non-free stuff, we'll pull it out. But otherwise, yeah, they pull it out when they find it.
Okay.
And it, from everything that I know, it seems that Fedora is actually, you know, seeking it out before
quite actively, yeah.
Release.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, they were going through, I think it was before Fedora 10, possibly 11, they'd gone through, like, a lot of their code and just, like, I forget if they were, like, I don't know, it was, what's the term, like a review or like a inventory or like an audit. They did a code audit. And I thought they'd gotten rid of, you know, quite a few things, actually. But I don't know.
Well, does Fedora have Mono in their GNU or their GNOME desktop?
For 11, they didn't.
They didn't for 12 either, did they?
I don't know. I'm not running 12. I can't check that.
As far as I know, they've not gone to Mono. I mean, I don't really run the GNOME version, so I wouldn't swear to it, but I'm... No, actually, you know what? No, it's on their blacklist. You know, they're like, will not be allowed in Fedora. So
yeah.
It is not.
I mean, Fedora seems to be pretty serious about making sure that everything is distributable. Because, you know how the Ubuntu's and Debian's and all this, they have the third-party repositories that you can just go in and enable. For Fedora, you have to actually go out and seek these repositories. Like, they won't even link to them in the distribution. So, like, they have, like, a total hands-off approach to it. They're like, you can do it if you want. You know, they're not going to stop anyone from, you know, having free will, so to speak. But they will just kind of wash their hands of it and go on.
Yeah, that's one of GNU's issues with distributions. If you make it easy for someone to access that stuff, even if it's not enabled by default, they have problems with that.
I kind of like the way Fedora does it. I mean, then again, a lot of people love the way Ubuntu does it because, I mean, it is just so easy. And there's a place, I guess, for both.
Yeah. Well, saying Fedora, it's just, you know, if you go to the RPM Fusion site, you can copy one string
and
paste it into a terminal and pow, it's there.
Yeah, but you say that, and I say that. I mean,
but not everyone says that.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard. I think it was someone I was listening to the other day on a podcast. They're like, I still can't figure out how to get DVDs to play in Fedora. And I was like, you install libdvd CSS, and you know, I mean, it's like not that hard. But and this is a podcaster who I figured, you know, would kind of
knew what they were doing.
Yeah, but apparently.
See, and that's
not,
the thing
so.
With the DVD thing is that's even in another repository because RPM Fusion wouldn't even touch that.
Yeah, that's right.
They're
so,
like,
right,
you know, everything
that.
Else is, you know, is questionable. You know, we can argue whether it's legal or not.
Yeah.
Like, they were like, we can't even argue that one.
Yeah, I remember that, actually. You're right.
If you enable that repository, libdvd CSS is the only thing that's in it.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
There's nothing else.
That. Yeah, that's right, yeah. But, you know, I mean, but isn't that an argument against the other distributions, too? I mean, if you grew up, I mean, if you cut your Linux piece on, like, one of these distributions where it says, okay, you've got it installed, now we're going to sit here and install all these extra packages for you that we couldn't legally distribute, but, you know, we got this little shell script or whatever set to, you know, run on the first boot, and we're going to install the DVD CSS and blah, 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 MP3 support, you know, proprietary video drivers. I mean, where is the user? I mean, like, what has the user learned from that? Like, nothing, you know? So then you go on to a Fedora system or Blackware system or Arch or whatever, and it doesn't do all that stuff for you automatically, and you're an idiot. You know, you're like, oh, I don't know how to get DVD support. You don't even know where to begin, you know, because you never had to think about that before.
Say, actually, that happened to me. I couldn't figure out how to get DVDs to play.
Yeah, I think, it's probably happened to everyone it happened to me, you know. I mean, you have to figure it out at some point in your life, but once you do, you're like, cool, I got it, and now I know more about Linux and how to do things. You know, you just learn whatever you learn from it. But if you don't ever have that experience, then you just never learn that little trick. I guess some people don't want to ever learn certain tricks, but I don't know. I think it's a good thing to have down in your repertoire.
Yeah. And the sad thing is libdvd CSS is actually completely free software. You know, it's just, like, lame. It's
Yeah.
It's free software, but it's not legal.
Right. Well, yeah. I guess. Some people say it's not legal.
Well, it violates the anti-circumvention part of the DMCA.
Yeah, okay. I guess, I don't really believe in the whole legal, illegal thing, but I see what
you're
saying. Yeah.
Oh, neither do I. I called it, but...
Yeah. Well, there's one Fedora Reloaded episode that I'm not going to be able to record now.
We'll just cut that out.
Well, let's skip the feedback for a second and go on to Azimuth story or topic, because he might have to take off early.
Oh, okay.
Well, mine's kind of a rerun. I gave a simple server setup, you know, using Alias and everything here a couple episodes ago, and I found myself using it so much that I decided, well, I'll just put that in permanent, you know, into the. Because it's a complicated enough for an old man to remember everything you got to put in, and I'd have to go look up a file and paste it, and you know, that's a pain. But in the process of finding that, I could put it in Bash RC, and if your Bash RC happens to check for a file which is bash-aliases. You can put it in there. But in my research for it, I find that just about everybody recommends changing aliases like that. They say it's just better to do a script, you know, a bash script. So I turned around and started reworking it. And so I did do the bash script. I've got it, I'll have it in the show notes, but let's see, I've got it in a paste bin right there. I'll put it in IRC. It's a simple one-line bash script. And, of course, you know, well, then most of my bash scripts are set around in my home directory. You know, they're kind of, you know, cluttered up all in the corners and everything. But this is one that I just can't run from the home directory because I got to run this stupid thing from wherever I'm going to, whatever folder I want to share. So I ended up you know, making the bash script and putting it in USR local S-bin, which is in my path, so it would always go look for it, and all you got to do is you throw it in there and make it executable, and you've got a command from whatever directory you're in. You just tell it web share, and then you can help use up Peter 64's bandwidth. That was my fault, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you tell Peter 64 you got good stuff that he likes, and boy, he'll burn up everything between here and Australia to get it.
What kind of stuff does Peter 64 like exactly? What are we talking about here?
Oh,
fishing shows or something?
Well, yeah, a lot of woodworking shows and stuff that he can't get.
Ladies riding around on lawnmowers and golf courses.
Well, I may be responsible for the sprinklers for all I know. No, well, that's just what I wanted to go to. You know, all the recommendations that I was getting in my research was not make a permanent alias, even though there are ways of doing it, and they're fairly simple. But that it is better to just make a bash command, and then it's there, and it's simple. You put it, you know, you can just throw the thing on any machine you have, and that simple server works really nice on the LAN because you don't have to set up FTP server. You don't need NFS or, you know, anything from any machine. You just put the stupid thing in there, and then you can make that directory available to everybody just on the LAN, all the computers, or if you open up a port in your firewall, you can make it available to your friends on the internet. And it just, well, you know, I run it in its own little terminal window, and you get feedback of what's going on in it, as well as when you're through with it and don't want to serve it anymore, you just hit Control C and it's all over with, and your system set back up, locked up tight, and you're not feeding things to the internet that you maybe don't want to.
That's pretty cool.
Make it even easier.
It was revisit.
Well, I hope all that turned out, because I had a hard time hearing you, Az. I don't know if it was my connection or yours.
It was his. I heard it as well.
But I
oh, it was my band.
Yeah. Mostly just there towards the end.
Well, rather than go over it all again, the script will be in the show notes, and if anybody wants it, they're welcome to it. The original how-to for this thing came from Foscass. He mentioned it on one of his screencasts, you know, how to use this Python command, and it's I just made a bash script out of it is all.
Very nice. Anything else before we move on to the feedback? No, that's it. Okay. So we got some feedback, huh, Klaatu?
Yes, we got, two feedbacks, but one of which I'm stealing for my code of the week, so or command of the week. But one was from a listener who says, He says, I think you guys did get something wrong when you said that before the Ubuntu forums came along, most of the answers people got from Linux geeks were RTFM. I thought I should correct you on that little misconception. In the late 90s, I was a member of the SUSE users mailing list, pre-Novell, and I can assure you that I have yet to see any source on the internet that can compare with that group. The list generated 300 to 400 emails per 24 hours, MUT, post fix, and fetch mail to Ultimate Power Tools. And there was never a day I didn't learn something new. I can't remember a single instance when someone got a brush off. There was an equal mix of noobs and power users on the list, and they all got along really well. The quality of answers was much higher than most of the answers on the forums today. Well, that's my 2 cents worth. And then he says, Peter, did you ever think about getting a GPS for the mower? What wit he has.
Who sent that in?
That's from Rod. I thought it sounded a little bit suspicious that the Ubuntu forums came along and made Linux more, you know, completely different and friendly. I can't imagine people would have gotten into it much at all if there was never any help out there.
Yeah, I think the whole RTFM thing was over-exaggerated there.
Yeah.
I did support for at least 2 years straight in Slackware on Freenode, and it takes the type of person that comes to the IRC and asks the question without doing any kind of research to get that kind of reply, usually.
Yeah, I mean, in my limited experience, RTFM has often been used more like, look, learn enough to be able to ask an intelligent question and then come back, you know? Which is fair, because if you don't even know what you're asking, then you're probably asking a question that's too far ahead of yourself, you know? You need to back up and kind of, like, do a little bit of research. And I like to think that I did that before I went in someplace and asked questions.
Yeah, it's a lot easier just to do your own search real quick and not look like a fool.
Yeah, I mean, even before the magical days of Google, I mean, just a little bit of research, you could get far along on some technical issue before you go in someplace and start asking questions. Yeah, and I can't say the name, Jay Shkwal in IRC is saying, you know, a lot of times it's just a question of doing a --help or something, you know, or just man, you know, foobar, and just kind of just doing that much research and not even going onto the internet. Actually read the manual.
Is that all the feedback?
Yeah, that's all the feedback. Like I said, we did get one more, but I'm going to just swipe that for myself when we go to the command of the week.
And there's two from Sigflup, though, right? Or just the one? Well, you know what?
Oh, yeah, there were two, weren't there? Yes. No? Hold on.
I don't have it in front of me, but I'm pretty sure Sigflup said that, referring to me because I said it took 20 hours to compile a full working desktop.
That's right, yeah.
And you can use binaries instead of doing it from...
Like piling like KDE.
Right, and I think that's what like PCBSD does.
Yeah, it does.
You know,
That's how I got it up and running so quickly, I think. I just used the binary.
It's good to have choices.
You can never have too many choices.
You really can't, in spite of what some people say. But the source code, did you do that because you wanted like the most recent version of KDE, or did you do it simply because you wanted to compile from source, or what? And like, obviously there's an advantage to doing it, but was there some advantage that you just couldn't sacrifice to go to the binary?
Well, the only reason I did because it was a newer version in the port system.
Okay. Yeah.
But after a while, I think that the binaries will catch up to the port system.
Yeah.
But with PCBSD working on theirs, they're going to have the latest one in binary. So as soon as they release PCBSD number 8, it'll probably all be up to date.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, they put a lot of work into their little PBIs or whatever they are. They're it's pretty cool. It's pretty nice.
And while we're on the topic of FreeBSD, one news site that I check all the time is FreeBSDNews.net, and they reported that that BSD magazine is going completely free now. They're going to be an online magazine only.
Oh, okay.
So they're no longer going to have the print version.
That's too bad. I mean, in a way.
Yeah. But
I mean, it's good, but it's also, I don't know, sometimes having the magazine is kind of nice.
It is nice having a magazine, but I still think the tech magazines are dead. I mean, if you ever need anything... What's that?
I think magazines are dead.
It just takes too long to print.
And they're so outdated. By the time you get them, I mean, everything's so old and outdated.
You know, I don't really find that to be a problem, though. I still learn quite a bit from like, tech magazines. I mean, and I get it. I have it pretty bad because, I mean, I like to get Linux Format, and they're a month behind in the States. Like, we get the issue a month after they come out in the UK for some reason. At least when, I mean, I don't subscribe. I buy it off the newsstand. But even so, I mean, I learn quite a bit just because a lot of what they're talking about is either still applicable or the concepts are still applicable. But I imagine BSD Magazine, I mean, that's probably a pretty niche market, so probably makes a lot of sense for them to go online only.
I'll just get it, you know, on the PDF now.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I'll throw it on my Nokia and I'll still have it, so I guess it's not so terrible, but I don't know, I like getting the magazine with the disc. That's just like a little thing I have. I just like going to the newsstand and buying the magazine and getting the DVD with whatever, you know, whether it's just the OS or a whole bunch of extras or whatever, and just checking it out. Looks like their site isn't even up yet, huh? BSDmagazine.com, is that what it's going to be?
It should be bsdmag.org.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the only thing you have to do is just sign up for their newsletter, and they email you a link.
Oh, cool.
So you can download the PDFs.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that this was by the same... I think this is the same company who does... Yeah, it is, Hacken 9 and Linux Plus.
Yeah.
Because I know Linux Plus is now going, I think, split. They're doing part print and part online. Like every other month they're going to be online or something like that.
What do you have for us tonight, Klaatu?
Well, it's not so much as what I have as it is so much as what I'm going to challenge everyone to do. I was listening to Tux Radar podcast the other day, and I think they had all switched to like KDE for a week or something. This was an old episode. But I got to thinking about, you know, different window managers and kind of how lost some people are when they switch to a different GUI. And I thought it might be kind of interesting for each of us to, and this doesn't exclude Peter64, even though he tried to ditch us today, but we ought to maybe for the next, like, 2 weeks until the next show, maybe, we should just drastically change what window or what desktop environment we are using. So something a lot more drastic than, like, me, you know, trying GNOME for a week. I mean, big deal, you know. We should do something, I don't know, something that we're not really familiar with at all, if possible, if anyone else wants to try this.
Yeah, it sounds interesting.
I was going to try, like, Rat Poison, maybe, because I've been meaning to try it, and I figure that could be a good thing to try out.
I'm game.
I was looking into, you know, possible desktop environments, and there are actually a lot more than even I realized. I mean, you think about the big ones like Fluxbox, LXDE, and XFCE, KDE, GNOME, and maybe Window Maker, but there's actually like a whole lot out there. You have like...
Hey guys, pardon me for interrupting, but I got to take off.
Okay.
You guys have a good show, and I'll catch the Ogcast.
Cool.
All right, see you later.
You've got like some links to different ones on MonsterBee.org, don't you, MonsterBee?
Yeah, it's not updated. Some of them are like old projects, but I'm going to put like a new list in the show notes.
Okay, cool.
I mean, there's probably like 30, 40 window managers and I think like 10 desktop environments that are all active projects.
Cool.
So it gives you something to choose from.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot out there. I mean, it was kind of surprising to me when and other podcasts have done this too. I think Lug Radio used to do this, but they would all, you know, change to, you know, this other environment that they're not used to. And then they'd come back on the show and, like, talk about how horrible it was and how confusing it was. And I was just like, my gosh, they sound like noobs, you know? It's like, okay, you change your GUI, but certainly you're not entirely lost, are you? And it seems like it almost underscored the weakness of the idea of a GUI, you know? Because it's like, I mean, you get fairly intelligent people switching just sort of the look and the feel or the, you know, the user interface of a system, and suddenly they turn into idiots. So I think it's probably not a bad idea to kind of like try out a different one and kind of get used to adapting to your environment, you know? I mean, I don't ever want to sit in front of a Linux box and just because it's running, I don't know, XFCE instead of KDE, just look like an idiot, you know?
So you're going to try the Rat Poison?
I'm thinking about it, yeah. I mean, there are, like I say, there are actually a lot more than I kind of realized, so I might try something else, but I'm thinking Rat Poison, because I've been meaning to try that for a long time. I downloaded it today. It's like 438 kilobytes or something. You know, it's like a tiny download.
Yeah, I'm all for it. We'll talk about it in a couple weeks.
Yeah. And not like the Linux Cranks coding challenge either.
Well, that's still going on. That was just extended a little bit.
Right. Extended like by 10 years.
Oh, well, yeah. Some of us need more time.
Yeah. Well, this isn't going to get extended 10 years, to warn everyone. Yeah, and if you don't do it and you can't prove that you switched for a week or two, you get kicked off the show permanently. Banned.
Should we do like a daily screenshot?
Yes,
for Unix porn?
Yes, you have to do daily screenshots to Unix porn to record, you know, to show your progress or lack thereof.
How about just two screenshots? Daily seems
right.
like a lot.
3:30 has to do daily. You can do two because I trust you a little bit more.
I see how it is.
And no virtual box things either. I want you doing your actual work in this environment.
How can we prove? There's got to be something we have to put on the screen to prove that we're doing it.
Do an LFPCI.
How would that prove anything?
Exactly.
Because if it's in VirtualBox, won't it read like whatever like virtual PC it is?
Okay, how about you do that and a screenshot of your browser showing like Tit Radio website, titradio.info.
Why would that prove anything?
Well, because how many screenshots are you going to find out there with Tit Radio?
I see what you're saying. You're trying to get... Okay, yeah, that's fair.
You could still cheat the other way around. You could make the new window manager your working environment and then run VirtualBox on top of that with your usual working environment.
Oh.
You know, if you're going through that much trouble...
So, is there a desktop environment you have not tried, Jay Lindsay?
As I look at the list, yeah, there are quite a few that I haven't messed with.
Oh, yeah, Cobra 2 is saying we could do like a PS, U-C-X to show all the processes, the process time of X. Yeah, there are ways to prove this.
It's like nobody trusts anybody around here.
I know, it's kind of sad, isn't it?
So what's 3:30 going to try?
I was thinking about trying GNU Step.
I thought that was
it's a neat one.
GNU Step. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. You're going to say the same thing. GNU Step is just a set of, like, libraries and everything, I think.
Ah.
If Window Maker is the actual name of the environment, I guess.
Well, I guess I will be going to monsterbee.org to find some more.
Yeah, just try Window Maker. You should be able to find it pretty easily.
That was in your list of ones that weren't allowed, sir.
No, it wasn't. Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was the very last one you said.
Well, if you've never tried it, then you should try it. I retract my list.
I will dig through this list, and by tomorrow, I will be running something totally off the wall.
All right.
And people can go look at my blog, because I'll start a 2 weeks with daily blog thing with screenshots.
Nice.
I was thinking about ICE Window Manager.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of thinking of FVWM, because Dave is always like... raving about it. Dave Yates is always raving about it, but I don't know.
Well, I'll let you know in a couple weeks.
Yeah, ICE is supposed to be pretty nice from what I've heard.
Well, you got a story for us, J-Man?
Yeah, I've been playing with something called Enna, which is yet another open source media center. And on the 2nd, they did their first public stable release, which is 0.4.0. And this thing is built on a large chunk of the Enlightenment libraries.
Ooh, interesting.
They have packages out for Karmic, but if you do the compile, this is not a very pleasant compile. I'll just say that up front. when you do the Enlightenment libraries, the ones in the Fedora repo were not new enough that I could compile this thing. So basically you're going to have to pull the SVN of the Enlightenment tree and then compile them that way.
Wow.
Do you have a link so I have something to look at while you talk?
Yeah.
You can paste in a random link to just any web page. You just want something to look at.
This is why no one trusts anyone.
Wow, this looks nice though.
But
yeah,
it's pretty. They keep it lightweight using all the Enlightenment libraries. you know, Enlightenment has all this, they have their own scripting language that's like C, and just things like alpha blending and anti-alias text. So they build on all these libraries, and they've come up with a pretty nice interface. It's still buggy because, you know, it's early. I managed to get it to hang on some images. I'm not sure what the problem is there.
Oh, this is really nice.
But it stores the metadata in the in a SQLite that they run. So once your media is accessed, it'll get the little images it shows that says DivX or whatever, Dolby Surround sound or whatever that is.
No, what distro did you install it on?
I did the build on my Fedora laptop.
And you think it'd be easier on Ubuntu?
They actually have packages for Ubuntu. I assume that the Enlightenment libraries are up to date, maybe. So maybe it wouldn't be that much trouble.
Yeah, I'm just looking at their website, and they're showing Ubuntu repo you can add to your source list.
Yeah, well, Ubuntu has all those PPAs and everything, so I'd be surprised if you had a lot of trouble getting it going. They mentioned that one of the features is done as a configuration that you can configure in a within the program, but I couldn't get that turned on, and in the configuration section of the screenshots, they didn't actually take a screenshot of that. So I assume it's not in there yet for the stable release, because that would be pretty important to take a picture of, right?
Yeah.
So the configuration file is really straightforward. I mean, when you look at it, you'll understand where to put your media paths and how to change the city for the weather and all that.
Like when you play a video, what is it used for the player? Is it their own custom player?
Yeah, it's built in there. They use a lib player for the back end. It's one of their own libraries.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
Yeah, they don't have everything in yet. If you look at the features page, you know, they're going to add podcast support and TV to pull from your DVR. It's an interesting project to keep track of.
Have you tried playing any games or anything with this?
Well, the games aren't in the stable version yet.
Oh, you can't use, like, any, like, different games on your... Like, if you had an Ubuntu install, you couldn't pull, like, a card game or something?
No, that support isn't even in the interface.
Oh, okay. Yeah, too bad Peter wasn't here. He would have liked this.
Yeah, this is definitely something he'll be interested in. Jay Lindsay, have you had any experience, like, with either... What was that other one? You know, Eliza or whatever that one was called that Peter 64 was talking about, or XBMC, compared to this? Like, is this noticeably faster, or is it just more of the same but different?
I couldn't tell you. I really don't have the experience there.
Okay.
Let's move on to 330.
I've been playing with this thing all week, and let me get a nice link for the IRC. One of the GNU generation projects is a thing called tinyog.com, and what it is a flash video converter that converts to Ogg Theora and then allows you to play it using the HTML5 video tags. It's written by a guy called Osama Khalad, and it's really straightforward. You take your... It only supports YouTube right now. He says it's really easy to add other streaming sites, but no one has done it yet, and he's asking for help. So that anybody that's interested should go to tinyog.com and look in the FAQ and see how to contribute. But it only holds the videos for 48 hours because he figured that people are going to convert them and either watch them once or download them because there's a download link. And, you know, there was no sense in holding absolutely every video that everyone had ever wanted to see for, you know, ever, for the most part. But it's all AGPL version 3. All the text on the site that isn't, you know, someone else's stuff is Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. It's actually really cool. It it takes a little bit of time to convert the video. But, I mean, this is a totally doable way to not have Flash.
Yeah, this is pretty neat. I mean, it won't actually load for me right now, but it sounds neat.
And one of the cool things it has is you can queue videos. So, like, instead of just opening a whole bunch of tabs and doing the same thing over and over and over, you can just queue them, and it'll show up when they're done.
Nice. So the input file necessarily has to be a Flash file?
Well, what you do is you just take the link from YouTube.
Okay.
Like, if someone sent you, like, a link, they were like, haha, look at this stupid video.
Right.
And they slap a YouTube link in there, and you're like, crap. You just take that and dump it in here, and it'll take, you know, it'll save the file from YouTube, convert it to Theora, and then present it to you.
Very nice.
Yeah. I mean, and this isn't the first piece of software to do it, but it's the first that I know of that's completely free software.
Now, is it the first one like this that you know of? Like, I mean, this seems like a very sort of turnkey solution. You know, you just, you get the link, you paste it here, you get to watch it. And it's pretty...
There's a lot of video converters, you know, YouTube video converters.
Oh, okay. I didn't know about these.
Yeah, but, you know, they output to MPEG-4 or, you know, AVIs or something like that. This is the first one that I've seen that's a turnkey AUG converter. And none of the other ones would let you watch it on the site. You had to download it then.
Well, yeah, no, I think that's the real selling point right there. That's what it seems, that seems to me, like, really, really convenient. Because, I mean, that's one reason I don't watch a lot of YouTube that people do send me, is because I just don't want to bother downloading the stupid thing, converting it, watching it, and then deleting both, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, just having it all just, you know.
But actually, I don't actually convert. I just don't want to bother downloading, because the InPlayer should, I think, plays FLVs.
Yeah,
but
InPlayer will.
Yeah, but I just don't bother.
This, and I mean, it takes, I've had anywhere from 3 to 5 minutes. It's long enough that you go, man, this is kind of taking a while. But
right.
It's not long enough that it's not worth doing.
Sure. It sounds pretty nice. It sounds like a really neat little service.
Yeah. And the thing is the URL is short enough, and it puts like a... You know how the URL shorteners have like a hash at the end of their URL and then it expands? This looks like a shortened URL. So it's great for, you know, posting into, you know, IRC without flooding a channel with a big long string of crap. Or into, you know, a micro-messaging service like Identica.
You're talking about the URL that of the video after it has been converted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you can link right to it, and it's there for 48 hours.
48 hours, okay. That's cool. Good find.
Do you have the option to download it if you want to?
Oh, yeah. There's a, you know, as the, you know, it has to go through the entire conversion process, but... When you're watching it, there's a link underneath that says download video.
Is there an option to then re-encode back to Flash and then repost to YouTube?
no, there isn't.
Darn.
But
using it then.
What it's doing is running FFmpeg to Theora in the background.
Well, there's a new Theora encoder that is supposed to be like substantially better, but I don't know if it's faster, but I guess they know what they're doing, so.
Say, it's a young kid. I mean, if you think you can help him,
send him
a message and let him know. I mean, even if, you know, you can save him, you know, 30 seconds of conversion.
Yeah, really. I
think he's going to be pumped about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I highly doubt it. What I might be able to conceivably figure out is parsing, you know, whatever other media site is out there as part, you know, going through what their typical way of calling that video is, you know.
Yeah.
That I imagine that's probably why he hasn't added more sites than YouTube. It's probably simply a matter of looking through, looking at what happens when you say, okay, I want to watch this video, and, you know, figuring out where that little media file is that you need to feed it in order for it to be converted. But YouTube obviously is the big one, I guess. I mean, that's definitely the one that you...
He says that all the other ones would be really, really easy to do.
Yes.
But I have absolutely zero programming skills, so I haven't looked into it yet.
Yeah, I think it's just literally, like, if you get HTTP Fox plugin for Firefox,
mm-hmm.
you can basically look at the incoming and outgoing, I guess it's like the type of traffic that you are seeing when you go to a site. So you can go to like YouTube or whatever, or I can't even for the life of me think of the other media sites right now.
Well, Vimeo, Daily Motion.
Vimeo, yeah. You know, you can go to there and you can possibly see, you know, a lot of the traffic and see what it's doing at that moment when you're saying, okay, play this video now. And if you kind of parse that either in your mind or whatever you have to do, you know, to plug into tinyog.com and then figure out where these videos, how that little string is stored, then you can probably write a little, I guess, a plug-in it would be for tinyog so that when you say, okay, I want to load a Vimeo, it knows where to look for that video as opposed to how it's going to look for a video on YouTube or whatever. That's what I'm anticipating. I can't get tinyog to load right now because I've been kicked offline by Comcast. Thank you, Comcast.
Oh, yay. We already have links going up in IRC from it.
Oh, cool.
That's a very nice find.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Nice, clean website, too.
Oh, yeah, it's very, very nicely designed. I mean, you can just look at it and go, he's doing everything in his power to stay out of your way. And there's also they're looking for someone to make them a logo.
Richard Quine.
Actually, I was gonna send him a message and see what he thought he could do.
That guy's got a knack for logos.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, this is a nice website, actually. Yeah, this is a really nice, this is cool.
Okay, and he's got to be between 13 and 18, and he couldn't be part of the new generation, so it's interesting that there are people much younger and much smarter than I doing really cool stuff like this.
I'm looking at his CSS work on the website. I'm looking at the rounded corners. I might take a look at his code.
Steal
some of
his code. Yeah. Are those CSS rounded corners?
I don't know. I'm looking at the source code to the page.
I'm seeing it in Conqueror even, so a lot of times I don't see rounded corners in there.
Then another feature of tinyog is there's a random button. If you click that, it'll just go to a random video that...
That's a horrible feature. Why would you want to do that?
I just got Rickrolled.
No way. I got the a collision on Whale Wars. So if you're bored, you know, instead of going to YouTube and trying to find something to watch, just watch something random that someone put up. You might find something interesting.
If you're bored, you should be writing a plug-in so that you can have different sites go through this thing. You shouldn't be clicking on random YouTube junk.
So I'm actually interested in getting this running on my own server and having it stay for longer than 48 hours. So this is just a drop-dead simple way of getting all this to happen. Like, you could literally make a free YouTube in, like, 20 minutes if you took the code for this.
Yeah, I bet the whole 48-hour thing is because of bandwidth. This is probably going to eat a lot of it.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Well, that and storage space.
Well, that and his processor is converting it.
Oh, yeah, that. And think about that.
Oh, I see. The random one just takes you to something that's already been...
Oh, yeah, something that's already been...
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Okay, make that very clear.
Yeah, I thought it would just, like, go out to YouTube and pull a random thing and then...
Oh, man,
encode it. You know, it makes much more sense this way.
I mean, if you're bored and you're looking for, you know, free as in freedom content, I mean, maybe, you know, under copyright or something, but...
Right.
Yeah,
but the way that it was
stuff
created.
On YouTube,
Very nice, fine 330. I'm going to... Well, I have a command line application called Ink.
Mm-hmm. And
have you guys ever used this?
No. This stuff in there.
Command line tool to check your ink levels in your printer.
Oh, wow.
It's...
Linux can print?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's very easy to use. I mean, well, of course you got to install it. The web address is ink.sourceforge.net, and most likely it's going to be in your distro's repository anyways. But as root, you just type in ink-p, and my printer's a USB, so I just type in USB, hit enter, and it tells me the percentage of all my cartridges. Like, I have a black one, it's 56%, and my color is zero right now because it's empty, of course. But it works pretty good, and it supports Linux and OpenSolaris, and it supports all the major printers like Canon, Epson, and HP. And there's a huge list of all the printers it supports on the website.
That's quite nice.
It says it works on network printers too, so I haven't tried that. I have to give it a try, hook up the printer to my BSD box and see if I can connect to it from my Debian box and get the ink levels. I don't know if it's possible, but I'm going to try it.
I wonder how accurate it is, because my perception my perception of like printer ink stuff is just that they lie to you half the time about the ink levels. And, you know, it just seems really not easy to me at all.
Now, I think this is pretty accurate because I was using this, I want to say 2003, I was using this, and the Windows computer said it was empty with the HP software, and this showed that it had like 12%.
All right. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's cool.
But the cool...
This could actually save people a lot of money.
I know. But I might actually have to get a printer now.
You probably want to watch it, though. You don't want to keep printing if it's, I would say, like 1%, 2%, or even 3%, just consider it empty. You don't want to actually, like, run it completely dry.
Right.
Probably clog up the print head.
Yeah, but, you know, if you needed to eke out just a couple of more pages, and I don't know how many times you've been printing, you know, like a paper for school, and you're like 10, 11, oh, come on, it's only 12 pages, get the last one out.
Yeah.
And guys, I think I've decided on Roxfiler for our thing. Or not Roxfiler, but Rox Desktop.
Oh, yeah, that's supposed to be really nice. I think I tried that. I mean, I know I've tried parts of it. I don't remember if I tried the whole thing. I think that might have been someone's tick one time on either TIT or Linux Crank. Someone was talking about that.
I know that, like, three-quarters of Tilt has been, you know, big Roxfiler people for a long time. I think Link's one of them, you know, one of those people.
Yeah, well, Roxfiler was one of those that was, I guess it was ported over to the evil OS that I used to use before I used Linux. And it was therefore pretty easy to install, so I did use that for a little while, and I remember liking it a lot. I think it's on Dynabolic as well. I think it's the default, at least Roxfiler, I think, is the default file manager in Dynabolic.
So Rox is a complete desktop environment then?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
And I found an RPM for it.
The file manager is actually so popular that people don't know that there's a desktop.
I never did. I knew of the file manager, and I think on either Cranks or TIT, someone mentioned the desktop. That was the first I'd heard of it.
That's a kind of good problem to have something so popular that people don't know about the other thing you do.
Yeah, really.
I wouldn't complain at all if that was, yeah.
Well, let's get on with our commands of the week. It's just,
all right.
Just you and I, Klaatu.
Okay.
Nobody else did their homework.
Yeah, figures.
You want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first. Mine's pretty involved.
All right, well, the other day I got this book, HTML Dog, The Best Practice Guide to HTML and CSS. Take it to work with me, and then with the Triple E, well, actually, the book has a lot of links in it, and a lot of times I can't get internet access on the Triple E computer at work. So what I did was, I don't know if we talked about wget before for somebody's command, but you can actually download a whole entire website, you know, and put it into a file, and you can view it later, you know, without being on the internet. So I went to the HTML Dog website and downloaded the complete website. I mean, it's a really long command. I can just run through it real quick. It's wget dash dash recursive, then no clobber, and then HTML extension, convert links, and then domains HTML dog, which I guess that's that just means don't follow any links outside of his website. And then you just put the name of the website in, and it downloads the complete website. It took like 5 minutes, so then I can view it at any time offline. I'll definitely have to put that in the show notes because that probably made no sense at all. That's a hard one to explain.
Well, now isn't the is the mirror switch? Doesn't that like grab a lot of those switches and kind of put it all into one. You know, if you just do wget dash dash mirror, I think that, like, includes the recursive switch for sure.
Does it?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what else it includes.
Yeah, if you have a shorter way of doing it without having to type all this in, that'd be great.
Looking through the man page. Yeah, here's mirror. This option is suitable for mirroring. It turns on recursion and time stamping. I don't really know what that is. Sets infinite recursion depth and keeps FTP directory listings. Oh, so that might go outside of the site then. So that might be a little bit dangerous.
But like I said, the book has so many links in it that refers to his website.
Yeah.
So it was nice just to have it on the hard drive now.
How big was it? Do you remember? Like, was this a huge thing to download or?
Well, it took like 5 minutes. Let me see what size it is.
I think as long as sites don't have a whole bunch of multimedia on them and stuff, I think probably, I would think they'd be pretty manageable.
Saying if you ran this with like a cron job, you could have like a constantly updated cached version of like the Fedora project wiki, just ready to go at all times.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, here's a command for you. Now, how do I get the size of a directory? Everything that's inside of it.
Everything that's inside of a directory?
Yeah, to get to like the size of the directory. What's the option for ls?
Oh, like lh or yeah, lh. That would give you the listing of everything with human readable file size.
Is there anything that would add up to total?
Probably. How about disk usage period? Wouldn't that do it? Yeah, it would. Disk du period dash no du dash dash h and then period. Yeah, that does that. Or capital H if you want it to round up or something like that.
It was 7.7 megabytes.
How many?
7.7 megabytes.
Oh, wow, that's funny. That's great. I love that. I mean, that's nothing.
So it's about the size of an e-book.
That's not bad at all.
Well, I got to remember that command. du-h period, and then I just grepped the folder.
That worked? I was doing that because I was in the folder.
Yep, I did that in my home directory.
Well, Cobra 2 says that you can also just do an ls space dash sh and then pipe that to grep and grep the word total, and that seems to do it, I guess, because s is sorting it, and I guess s must give you a total, which I did not realize.
Well, let me try that one.
You didn't do the h, but I like human readable stuff. I can't calculate bytes.
This isn't telling me nothing.
Oh yeah, again, I'm sorry, I'm assuming that you're in the directory that you want to calculate. I guess
it's just telling me the total. Let me go on to the directory.
Oh, yeah, you're right, actually. I think he's wrong.
Well, there's an easier way to go about this. If you do du-hs, human readable, and summarize, and then the directory, it will give you the total.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Okay. Just like what we did before, right?
Yeah, except instead of just saying period, he said the directory, which is probably what I should have said to be clear.
No, but if you do the summarize... the S.
Oh,
it will actually give you the total.
Yeah.
You don't have to grep for anything.
Well, no, I didn't grep for anything either. It gives you even without
no,
the S.
No, he grepped for it.
Oh, sure. Sorry.
Well, the output's the same.
I don't think. Okay, here it is in IRC.
No, that's not the same what I'm using. I didn't use the S.
Right. The summarize option.
Perfect. That's going in the show notes. That's a good one.
That is a good one. CJ Lindsay did have a command after all.
Should I put that your name by that command in the show notes?
Sure.
I don't want Claw2 to get credit for it.
No, because I didn't do the S, so I lose. And Cobra 2's was way too long. LS-S pipe grep total. My goodness.
Well,
Jay Rulo had DU-S.
Well, the one Cobra said just gave you the total of the folders and files.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it kind of depends on where you are. Like, if you're just out in your home directory.
It doesn't, no matter where. Even if you're inside, it just tells you how many items are in the folder. Isn't that what it does?
I see. I'm not. Yeah, you're right, I think. I'm not quite getting the. The ls-h-s does not work. Grep total does not work. It's giving me a different number than du. So I trust DU. Like, my documents folder is like 483 megabytes. Jeez, what do I have in there? With DU, and then when I do an LF on that, it gives me like 215 megabytes. So I don't really understand.
Well, the size option for LF is actually specified in blocks.
Ah, okay.
So the number will be way off, probably.
Okay. I never knew that. I didn't know they were specifying it in blocks.
Just think, when this is posted on HPR, somebody's going to listen to this and say, wow, these guys are amazing.
These guys have no idea what they're talking
about. They just blew my mind with that command.
You want your mind to truly be blown?
Go ahead and try.
Yeah. Sigflip emailed us and gave me this command of the week. I was going to try to play it off like it was mine, but really no hope because no one would believe it. So it's basically using a for loop in order to download sequential things from a website. You could obviously do this with obviously a for loop, you can do lots of stuff with it. I wouldn't know how, but here's how you can use it to download sequential files, for instance. So Hober2 told me last night that I should listen to some of the old TWAT episodes, this week with the tech episodes. And there's a lot of those, actually, you know, of course. It's an old show, and they had like 100 episodes or something, or probably more. So if I wanted to download like the first, I don't know, 10, you know, to listen to tomorrow, I could do for, that's the word, F-O-R, space SF, space N, I-N, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, all space delimited, semicolon, do, wget, http://www.twattech.org/ep/twat00$FF.mp3:done. And what that does is it's going to say, okay, so for FF, and then that FF variable kind of becomes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and then it replaces that FF in the do, the wget, it replaces the $FF at the end of twat00 with whatever number you've specified in the for loop. And I guess the at the point of the 10, it would actually break down. I would have to start a different loop for that because I have an extra zero in there. But certainly for the first 9, I could do all that with one for loop command. And that's it. That's how you do for loops in Bash.
Are you gonna put that in IRC?
Yeah.
These guys are going crazy in the IRC wanting you to post it.
Yeah, I'm going to let them beg for it a little bit longer, then I'll finally paste it in. But they think they just can't hold out anymore.
That's a pretty complex command.
You know, it really is.
Oh, once you write a couple of for loops, they're all pretty much the same.
Yeah, it took me a couple of emails back and forth with Sigflip to understand what she was trying to tell me. But yeah, once I realized that it was the FF, and I guess that could be anything. I don't know what made her choose FF. It really should just be FUBAR, for FUBAR in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, semicolon, do wget URL slash twat00 $FUBAR.mp3, semicolon, done. So, yeah. Yeah, and Jay Rulo's pointing out that Bash Potter has really good for loop examples, and I agree. Bash Potter and what I'm using right now, Mash Potter, I mean, just if you want to see Bash scripting done really well, but in a way that you can kind of almost understand it, look at those, because you kind of, like, you know what's happening. You just need to see it written out in a script, and then you kind of figure it out.
And you need to type done at the end? That's part of it?
I've never tried it without the done.
Yeah,
so.
You do need that.
Okay.
Uh-oh, Jesse James has a shortcut.
Yeah, I guess you can just do it as, like, a squiggly bracket, whatever those things are called, 1.8, closed squiggly bracket.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to get the sequence of numbers in there. You can also put commands in there, so you can get the results of ls star dot whatever evaluated into the expression. So
wow.
For each file that matches this in this directory, do this to the file.
Wow, that would be pretty cool.
Great commands.
I think the best so far, the best yet.
Yeah, they just keep getting better.
It really helps that someone, you know, like a programmer wrote in and provided a command of the week. I can only give so many interesting switches for, like, you know, LS or DF and call it a command of the week.
Yeah, it's like my wget command. It looked really simple on paper. Then once I start reading off all these options,
yeah,
it's just like, what am I talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, should we end the show with a few phone calls?
We could try that, yeah.
We'll give it a go.
All right.
If they're awake.
They might all be busy debating for loops and do while.
Yeah, they've been on hold for a while, so they might be sleeping.
It's not Gorkon. I don't want this. I don't want to hear them.
First caller, Cobra.
How's it going?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Cobra 2, you're not asleep.
No, I'm not.
Sounds like you're up north.
I am.
Your voice is changing.
All right.
You sound like a northerner.
Yeah, you kind of sound like New Yorkish or something. Or like Vermont.
Like a Yankee.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah.
So you having fun up there?
Not really. It's freezing cold outside. I'm sitting in the house, and it's about 55 degrees inside, and I think that's warm.
What are you doing? Are you renting?
No, actually, I'm staying for free at a house for sale.
Exactly how are you doing that?
Through very good friends.
Oh, okay.
I thought you just broke in.
I thought it was just squatting or something, yeah.
No, that'd be nice, but slightly illegal.
Yeah, plus you wouldn't have, like, power and stuff, probably.
No, probably not.
Is there internet?
Pretty good internet, actually. I've got my, I don't know if you saw my setup up at the Ohio Linux stuff, but I'm pretty much doing the same thing and pulling about 1 megabyte a second down and about 500 kbps up.
Are you using it now to call in, or are you on your cell phone?
I'm on my cell phone, on Silk.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
But do not name the platform. Do not name the platform that you're using. This is a no mention.
Not naming the platform, but I'm going to say that I am over the data connection of the cell phone, not a wireless connection.
Oh, what the heck? What kind of phone do you have?
Oh, here it goes.
I got the new Motorola on Verizon.
Is it an Android?
Uh-huh.
Now, how is it? Do you like it?
I love it.
The only thing keeping me from an Android phone is the cost of the data plans. They're like $80 a month.
You can get discount pretty easy. It doesn't really amount to much. Like through my college, I've got a 20% discount off of data plans and voice plans. So it cuts it down a little, but not much.
I was gonna say, I've seen all your screenshot Unix porn. Can you actually install like anything on that, or is there certain special Android apps?
It's basically Java built on top of some C libraries. So everything on the application layer, which is like everything you would use, the user interface and everything, is Java. So you just have to do everything. All your coding and any application you have to do has to be through Java.
Oh, okay. So like I couldn't download the source code to, I don't know, Roxfiler, for instance, and compile it and install it, correct?
As far as I understand, yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
No.
It's still kind of interesting, though.
Well, I've kind of hacked around a little bit, and I actually do have ifconfig and some other things that were not on the phone, now.
Okay.
But I'm doing that through BusyBox.
Right. Yeah, I imagine the command line apps, I would imagine you could probably manage to get in there.
Yeah, I'm working on getting Aircrack on it right now, because, well, that would just be fun.
Yeah.
It'd be useless to me, because the wireless card on the phone does not have monitor mode, which sucks.
No, yeah. Well, but what in terms of compiling stuff on the phone, like, do you have to download, are there, like, development libraries that you can download pretty easily for it, or do you have to go... Like, do you get the SDK for Android or something? Or, I mean, how is that done?
What do you mean, like, compiling on the phone? Like, actually,
oh, you don't compile
code
on the phone. You cross-compile on your computer and then put it over on your phone?
You would compile it on your computer and then put it on the phone.
Okay. And you do that with the SDK? Or you just say, compile this for the ARM processor or whatever chip it is, or Motorola?
You'd get you'd get the SDK.
Okay.
But I think we're kind of talking about two different things here. Like the SDK is just for the application layer itself, like everything else.
Yeah, no. Let's say you want to get ifconfig.
Okay.
On the phone. You've got the source code on your laptop, so you just invoke GCC and compile it, but you tell GCC that you want to build it for ARM or whatever processor your phone has in it. Is that
how
you do
it?
What
I had to do is I had to build it for ARM and put it on the phone, but I have to invoke another script to actually run it inside the phone.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's a little screwy, and
okay.
I've messed up a lot.
Okay, wow. Well, it is interesting because, I don't know, it seems like we kind of saw Java as the GUI layer in a lot of, like, demonstrations and stuff, but I never really saw one that was actually, you know, the user space on top of an operating system. But now I guess we see it. I mean, this is what it is. You know, it's like Java actually being your entire user interface.
Yeah, a lot of cell phones are actually Java layers running on top of something else.
Yeah, it's a Java layer that runs on top of a bunch of C libraries, which is an actual Linux operating system. But it is, like you're saying, it is the entire user interface.
Yeah, interesting concept.
Like cloud computing for the most part, when you think about it, I mean, you have a server that runs something, you've got a little interface into it, and all the applications can run pretty much on any machine because you're all linked into a virtual machine. Anything I said just made sense. Yay.
Yeah, that's beyond me right now, but I think I see what you're saying.
What's the name of that new phone that Google just came out with?
Nexus One.
No, okay, because I have T-Mobile, and they say I can get it for $180. But if I didn't get the data plan with that, would that be pretty much like an N800? I mean, I could probably do all the same things on it, right?
Yeah.
Because that would be a heck of a lot cheaper.
I mean,
you really think you'd be able to not, live without a data plan, though? I mean,
well, it has Wi-Fi.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
The only catch would be is if T-Mobile is actually requiring you to get the data plan itself.
Right. That's probably part of the
phone. The phone network.
Yeah.
Like, with Verizon, it's like, hey, we'll sell you this phone for pretty cheap and give you a nice big rebate, and we're going to require that you have a data plan as long as you're on our network.
But they're saying $79.95 for if I sign a contract for 2 years, and I can get the phone for $180. That's what it is.
Well, honestly, that's a pretty good deal. It's a little bit cheaper. But the thing that weighs me away from the Nexus is that it doesn't have a physical keyboard. That would be kind of buggy.
Yeah, I'm kind of tired of devices without a physical keyboard lately. I don't think that the touch keyboards are really where they need to be. Or maybe they'll never be where they need to be. I like the physical keyboard.
You say you're on T-Mobile, right?
Yeah.
You might want to look at sticking around for a Motorola mouse phone, the GSM version of the Droid.
And I could just probably put my SIM card in it?
And you'd be able to use, even if you got the European version, you'd still be able to get onto 3G if you wanted it.
Probably going to wait to about June or July and maybe look into one. That's when I can get a new phone for free. I think that's where my time is, where I can get a new phone. So maybe I can get something like this, you know, at a discounted price. Well, let's take some more callers. Well, Art hung up on us. I don't know who this one is. Hello, mystery caller.
Bye.
Yeah, the mystery caller hung up. How about this mystery caller?
Yeah, it's not that big a mystery.
You're like a stalker.
I know.
Well, I got a reprieve.
You didn't have to babysit after all.
No, I had my laptop or my netbook all unplugged. I was headed out the door when son and daughter-in-law got home, so I just let them relieve Granny.
Well, at this time, they'll be sleeping. That'd be an easy job, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that wasn't the problem. It was just that it turned out to be the wrong night.
Podcasting night. Don't go by the barn.
Right.
My call quality.
Sometimes really good, And then sometimes there's like a weird noise.
Yeah, it's a little bit variable this time.
Weird.
Yeah, sometimes it sounds like you're like downloading, you know, a lot of stuff on your on the network or something. Or you know what I mean? I mean like something's eating your bandwidth.
The place where I'm sitting at, I'm sitting right in between two towers, so it's probably fighting for one tower and the other.
Oh, you're on, that's right, you're on SIP via the data plan of the cell phone.
Yeah.
Right. Wow, that's interesting. That's pretty cool.
That's why I called in. I could.
And does anyone, I mean, like, does T-Mobile or whoever you said you were on, do they know that you're doing that? I mean, that they're okay with making SIP calls via data plan, or they don't really know that?
I'm on Verizon, and the sales rep that I was talking with when I bought the phone, I told him my intentions to make SIP calls over the data plan, and he's like, not really blocked, man, so have at it.
Wow, nice.
I mean, like, you can go into your SIP client settings and change the ports around to whatever you want to, right?
Okay.
So if I change to, like, 5061 for my port for my SIP client, it won't register. I'm not real sure why, because I don't have any tools to check and see what's going on.
All right.
But 5060 registers just fine, so I'm assuming that they're cool with it.
Yeah, I mean, if they weren't cool with it, I'm sure they would have had the foresight to somehow disable it from being done, so...
One thing that I can't do, I do have SSH Dropbear installed, which is SSH server, and I can't SSH from the data plan into my phone. I can only do that on the local network.
Oh, that's interesting.
But I can understand why that is, because I mean, if you could SSH into your phone, you could be vulnerable to all sorts of little hacks and whatnot.
But only if you leave it on, right?
Well, it's your phone. My phone stays on 24/7. That's more out of habit.
Are you ever going to SSH into your phone? I mean, don't you not really need an SSH server? You only need... I mean, I'm trying to say that wouldn't a hack into your phone via SSH require that you're running an SSH daemon allowing incoming connections?
I am running an SSH daemon.
Allowing incoming connections via SSH?
Oh, allowing incoming connections via SSH.
But why? You're not going to SSH into your phone, are you? You're going to SSH into your remote box via your phone going out. Oh, but of course, you need to get the data back.
Well, I find it easier to SSH in and like SCP music, asterisk cat.
Oh, okay.
Whatever.
Stuff on your phone.
Stuff like that. And also, you can't really access the shell in like a native way. Like
yeah.
When you're doing it from the USB, you always have to preface everything with like ADT, which is the development terminal, and that gets annoying really fast.
Oh yeah, wow.
So it's more of just an ease of use thing for me. Talk about something else.
How can we talk about anything other than Android? Once you mention it, you're bound to talk about it forever. The show is now Tit Radio Android Hour.
Hey, look, I'm starting to hate right about now. You need to try new desktop. Getting rocks installed is a pain.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Even, I mean, isn't there a package or something for it?
No, there's not.
Oh. And it's not in the repos at all?
Nope. And it doesn't have the regular install either. Just go work around a bunch of BS. I'll get it, though.
I would have kind of expected it to be in the repository, but I guess not.
It's not in Debian either. It's just the file manager.
Just the file, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
Rock's term.
Yeah, I got Rock's term.
Well, anything else, guys, before I end this show?
Nope, I'm good.
Let's see what kind of magical song Terry F. has for us tonight.
Well, that'll be interesting.
Hopefully it's better than Dan's last pick for Tilt.
It's like, is Dan even trying?
He's trying to get somebody to kill himself in what he's doing.
Well, I think our song's going to be good. If it's not, somebody send Terry F. an email and let him know.
Or you can just PM him on IRC.
Yeah.
So I will see you guys in a couple weeks.
Yep. See you guys later.
Later on.
Good night.
Good night.
Hey, this is Terry from the Juice Penguin capping off another Chit Radio. Tonight's song will be off the Jamando site. It's by Burt Jared, a song called Broke Down. This song sounds a lot like Sammy Hagar. I don't know if you're a Sammy Hagar fan or not, but I am. If you are, you'll like it. If you're not, you won't. Have fun.
Take a lesson from the past. When everything is moving fast, there's nothing worse than falling in. When everywhere is where you've been, just try to leave. Satisfied, but change the day that promised.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.